black gold. And then there is the sea itself, an uninvited guest bearing down on him with the sharp scent of an incoming tide. As he stoops to gather up the straw from his evening's labours, he does not yet know that he will not be able to endure the smell of the sea again. Nor does he know that he will never take his future grandchildren out on the short boat ride to watch the dolphins on the summer islands. These children will shriek and bicker, but he will not take them. He does not yet know this, and if he did, he would find it impossible to conceive of such an aversion, for he imagines he will love them dearly. The thatcher worked the roof at night, twisting and shaping the ears of corn like spokes in a giant wheel. His shadow fell to the ground, a mad hatter's curvatures extending and reforming in the sepia dark, the pit helmet illuminating every straw and strand in a patchwork of light. He had first climbed the ladder one summer dusk, shortly after he had closed on the house. Standing on the top rung, he'd inspected the frayed seams of the old roof, swatting away at the midges with the backs of his hands. Their squashed bodies settled along the line of his brow as he tried to clear the sweat from his eyes. He picked and pulled at the ancient ridgeline, and the dust from the heart of the thatch settled around him like ash. "Death may be one, but its manifestations are many," the priest they had consulted early on had told them, not long after they had moved down to the sea. This was in the days when they still had hope. "Listen hard for your God," he'd advised, in a complete non sequitur that had ensured they never went back. "Well, I'm listening now," he thought, setting his lips together and pulling the spars away from the steep gable end of the roof, tugging at the needles a little more harshly than was needed. He'd started on the thatch in the restless heat of an Indian summer, when the late roosting swallows flew so close to his face that had he ever chanced to look up and notice them, he might have been afraid. He'd chosen a house in a clearing where he knew Janie would not venture. She'd never walked in this part of the forest, even when she was still strong, preferring instead the soft, peaty trails of the reclaimed fields that led from the marshes and on out down to the sea. Black gold, his father had called it, that soil. Black gold for both its fertility and its savage beauty. But then his father had been a man of the land. This was back when he himself had still been at school and often worked odd jobs on the farm in the evening and at weekends. An only son, he'd always intended to stay on the farm, but one day when he was helping out a friend on a neighboring estate, an agricultural employment agent had stopped by to try to arrange for a full-time worker there. The man had dropped his paperwork as he climbed back into his car, and one of the cards was for a thatcher looking for an apprentice. That had been the end of the land. He'd left his father's house to spend near on 4 years with Malcolm Blaine, Master Thatcher, the first couple of them living in a lean-to at the rear of the business that resembled little more than one of the chicken coops he'd left behind in the farmyard. "Thatchings for Incans," his father had said from the doorstep of the farmhouse, using the old word for incomers as he watched his son pushing his rucksacks into the boot of the Morris Minor. "Split shingles for roofs, now there's a thing." His father had not waited for him to pull away before shutting the door and going back to his supper. They had not spoken again. All that September, the thatcher strained long into each night, working in shifts. First on the groundwork, throwing the buckets of wet straw, his fleece shirt discarded over the handle of his spare pitchfork, and then increasingly straddled in the air amongst the butts and battens above. As he fastened the courses along the roof, the direction of the thatch began to turn towards the valley well before he reached it, and he found that he liked this. like the feeling of predictability and certainty it gave him. It was a long time since he had thatched, but he soon rediscovered his old rhythm, and he often forgot the meaning of his presence on the roof, so absorbed was he in the simplicity and repetition of the task itself. The knowledge of his craft had come back to him. Each of its muscles held its memory, each blade of straw a place, waiting somewhere deep inside him for a moment such as this. In truth, he did not know why he was there, except that he was unable to be anywhere else, to be with anyone else. Not in the claustrophobic corridors of the cottage hospital, nor in the living room of the small flat down by the harbour. Rented only last month when Janie, just out of the hospital for the third and last time, announced her need for a daybed with a view of the sea. Nor did he know at what point he'd decided that he would live in the cottage himself, one day soon. But he noted that he had begun calling it his thatch, and that in his breaks from work on the roof, he'd started looking round the wasted, meagre yard for a patch of full sun where he could plant black-eyed Susans and Russian sage. His task was nearly complete. He needed just a few hours more. And on that last night, he had begun work when there was still light enough, slanting through the heavy branches of the pines. It hit the roof at a low angle, and he wore a plastic visor pulled down over his long hair so he could thatch directly into the sun. After her nurse had arrived that evening and he was about to leave, Janie had turned her eyes towards the door, a single flicker of their lashes opening up a question between them that he did not want answered. She'd never once asked where he was going all those nights, and he had never offered an explanation, but she was asking now. He stood outside the door then, his hand resting on the handle where it had closed behind him. He wasn't sure what he was waiting for exactly. He thought about going back to her. He played this out in his mind for some minutes, imagining her under the sheets just where he had left her. Then he turned and headed down the path, hoping to catch the last of the natural light. The first hint of thunder came in from the sea just as he oversailed the apex. Uncut straw in the loading yoke stood up on end in the rush of the wind and the static. He worked on, transfixed. He'd applied the last yelm the week before, and he'd just now reached the ridge, sealing the cavity in front of the chimney and driving in the horizontal spars in front of him, hammering down on the pin-like nails. It began to rain. Soft, slow drops at first, illuminated by a single fork of lightning, then pelting and slicing into his exposed skin. The ladder rattled and hammered against the boarded windows of the house, pulling him away from the wall to swing almost upright from the ground, and then sending him ricocheting back against the guttering, smashing both his legs with its force. His last clear memory as he fell was the sight of the thatch and of the fire weaving its way across the golden rods towards him. In the hospital, he lies trapped, hoisted by his pinned-up leg, a ghost hovering above his own body. They send him a chaplain this time, not the priest from the sea chapel, but then, like their god, they are all one, he thinks. You've been lucky, the chaplain tells him. Lucky. He personally has known a much younger man who died from such a fall. It was already morning when they found him. The hospital had been trying to reach Janie's next of kin. They'd started looking for him in the early hours when he still hadn't come home. A man out walking his dog along the sandy track had smelt the burn and seen a pair of feet sticking out from under a fallen ladder. You've been lucky, the chaplain says again, as if feeling the need to repeat the only good news he can give him. The thatcher stares out across the fields behind the car park. He finds that it is not the loss of his wife that is troubling him so, but an obsession with more mundane things, things he needs to know and cannot trust anyone else to report on. He waits 10 days. Then he is wheeled out of the hospital just after breakfast. The funeral is at 11, and the chaplain wants to allow time to negotiate the practical difficulties posed by the cost and lack of mobility. On the way, the thatcher asks, no, begs, for a detour. A few minutes only. Left here, right there, then straight on through the pines, up ahead, and they are there. Most of the thatch has gone, but the building is still standing. Saved, it seems, by the torrential rain that followed the lightning strike. From a distance, it looks as if the roof covering is molten lava poured over the underlying structure, a slice of treacle slipping across the hollows and spurs of the joists and rafters. Before the storm, he had finished the eaves and barges with elaborate patterns and crossroads that found their way up into the ridgeline in a swirl of woven straw. This was where a thatcher would leave his personal signature, an individual quirk of the trade that marked the job as his alone. This is where he had carved the birds, a single row of swallows along the stark ridge, arching their necks for a flight they already knew was beyond them. He tells the chaplain to pull up at the end of the short driveway, and he is helped out of the hospital transport. Wire netting and dead mice lie on the ground in front of him. He wheels himself into the wrecked yard to peer upwards at the damage. The ridge itself is still intact, but he sees, right in the centre of the roof, that in his face to finish, he has missed a detail. One of the smallest birds is dragging a clipped and ragged wing behind him, leaving it the appearance of being trapped in a quicksand of burnt-out stubble. He looks around him. He asks the chaplain for pen and paper, and when he has them, he makes a note of what can be saved, what will want replacing. He writes a list of materials. He knows that he has been lucky. There are many tasks to be done. He will have to begin again, this time working from the ground upwards. He is, it seems, to become a man of the land.